I want to talk today with a little slideshow of about how I practiced with the two truths on my recent vacation to New York City. So I've got a few photos taken with my phone, but you know, I've had a great day. I've really had a great day. I've convinced myself that my back is getting better. You know, it just goes out every once in a while, but it's getting better. And I went to my Qigong class, and I had to set this up, and I needed to get a cord to fit, and this computer expert at Office Max was just wonderful to work with. I mean, first she went on and on about male and female coupling. And we finally got down to the computer business, as far as I could tell. And she just knew exactly what to do, and she even sort of set it up. She was going to go into my file and arrange my photos for me too. She was just great. I made some laundry soap out of a bar of soap and a food processor. And I even used it today, and it worked well. In addition to my own clothes, I threw the, you know, we're doing this new hand towel practice in the first bathroom here to try to reduce our use of paper towels, and so we wash these cloth towels, and I threw them in, and then I rushed back after the farmer's market, and a bodhisattva, some person who has taken a vow to relieve suffering, took them out of the washing machine and hung them up for me to dry. So that bodhisattva, it was just part of this great day. So when I was in New York, I just, you know, maybe vacation just puts you, of course it does, it puts you in a very different frame of mind. And I just, all of these kind of Dharma words kept echoing back to me, and experiences of the Dharma and the two truths. I went there. I've been looking at this short sutra. That I talked about before. Kokyo a few weeks ago reminded me of this short sutra. And it kind of kept me on track. A young monk, Bahiya, asks the Buddha, how one should train to study the Dharma. And the Buddha says, Bahiya, you should train yourself thus, in reference to what you see, in reference to the seen, there will be only the seen. In reference to what you hear, in reference to the heard, only the heard. In reference to the sensed, only the sensed. In reference to the cognized, only the cognized. That is how you should train yourself. When for you there will only be the seen when you see something, only the heard in reference to what you hear, only the sense in reference to the sensed, only the cognized in reference to the cognized. When that's the case, Bahia, there is no you in connection with that. So doing this practice of just trying to meet what comes to your eyes without adding a big story, without adding a judgment, oh, I like this, I don't like that, I don't like that perfume, I don't like that person's hair. If you just greet what you see, what comes into your ears, the temperature that falls on your skin, without a story, just accepting it and not rejecting it, then this you, this kind of concrete self that you've built up of likes and dislikes, that all falls away, Buddha says. And that's how you should train in this practice. And it's kind of our Zazen instruction that many of you have taken in various places. Just sitting, and when thoughts arise, let them go. When the light changes as the sun sets, just let it go. When the school children get out, when their parents pick them up and they're honking on the horn, rather than, have a story about, that child should be waiting for her parent, at the curb. Let that sound come in and let it go out. You find yourself kind of drifting away from your likes and dislikes. Dogen says, you're dropping body and mind. Just accepting what comes into your senses and letting them go, following your breath. So this Buddha's instruction to Bahia is a lot like our meditation instruction. And that when you just sense in reference to the sensed, there will be no you in connection with that. There is no you there. When there is no you there, you are neither here nor yonder nor between the two. This, just this, is the end of suffering. So those are Buddha's instructions that I took with me to New York City. Jean Bush years ago said something about practicing with your sense gates. And I'll just, kind of paraphrase it. This is sort of my understanding of what he said, but it's something that I really have practiced with. We really have a sense of when we're going out there to grab something. We hear that first honk of the car across the street, and we really want to go out there and figure out what's happening. Or we really want to start making up a story, like, why doesn't that driver go out and get his child instead of honking on the horn? I mean, we're really going out there. Or when we sit down and we decide that maybe it's a little too warm in here. Your thoughts are really about, I wonder if somebody's going to go up and change the thermostat. But there's really, really all of your energy is really going out there to pick something up. And this practice in the scene, may there be just the scene, in the herd, may there be just the herd, you really kind of wait patiently for that sound to get all the way to your ear. And there's no story. There's no lurching out to grab more of it. You know, sometimes on Friday nights they have music in the mission over here. And, you know, we sit in here and we just want to sing along. You know, we know the song, we know the tune. You know, we're really reaching out there. You know, what would it be like to just wait for that sound to come right to your ear and just hear it? You know, not kind of remember all the times you've heard Proud Mary, but just to let it come in. And that's when this you kind of starts fading away, and we're just in this big dynamic functioning of the universe. When we're not this solid self with likes and dislikes and making up stories about poor parents picking up their children. We're just part. We are remembering then our part, our participation in that total dynamic functioning of the universe. And it's nice to be in a big city that way. Without much of an agenda, a few restaurants. I went to a lot of restaurants. I wanted to go to a few museums. I wanted to hear a few shows. But I really wanted to just be in the city and have a routine, from my hotel, have a few restaurants that I liked for breakfast and lunch, that I could go to regularly and get to know their menu. This is a good practice to be in that total dynamic functioning of a big city. I really like how us humans put things together, how we figure things out. I mean, that subway system has been there for 100 years and takes millions of people to just everywhere. There was a story on NPR today about the birds that fly in formation. There's really no leader. It's a leaderless, you know, we think they're in perfect Vs. You know, they must be following something, but the scientist was saying that there's no leader. They just do it that way. You know, the leader can switch, you know, at any time, and they're still in a V. Or the first person right at the tip can switch any time, and they're still in a V. And they said, the scientist was going, how do they do that? And then the scientist said, how do people in New York walk around the sidewalks and not run into each other? There's no leader there, and yet we somehow know exactly what to do. We just do it in a remarkable way. You know, the plays that you see are just someone looking very closely, just like our ancestors really tried to, our Buddhist ancestors really tried to figure out what is reality. How does our mind work? And they looked at their own minds very closely. And so now, you know, a couple thousand years later, we've got, you know, Broadway. We've got playwrights that really try to figure out how are we doing? What are we like here on this planet? It's the same kind of deep inquiry. I saw Fun Home, a coming-of-age musical drama about coming of age in a dysfunctional family. And I saw The Curious Incident of the Dog at Nighttime, a play, a coming-of-age play about growing up in a dysfunctional home. I tend to pick the same play over and over. And then I saw a lighthearted musical, Kinky Boots, about a coming-of-age story of growing up in a dysfunctional home. You know, put to music by Cyndi Lauper. But, you know, they were all just, you know, looking at, you know, what are we all about? What, how do we walk down the street and not bump into each other? Very moving. And so this practice in the scene, may there only be the scene, is really very opening. It really starts connecting you to all of your senses, to all of the things that are stimulating your senses, and maybe even if you're not a Buddhist, you can go on vacation and start feeling kind of bigger, connected to a larger world. Maybe that's just the nature of you know, there's something routine about our lives, and when we go on vacation, we want to do everything but routine. So we're already dropping. We're already open for something else. But this is a good practice for me to feel connected and intimate with my surroundings. Maybe I'll figure out a way to show my slides now with this microphone on. I'll come back here to read more. So what, your password is like your mother's maiden name and your brother's birthday? Does that keep me safe?
Now we know.
Oh. Okay. Not bad. So, there we go. This is my neighbor's dog. It has nothing to do with New York, but it was a good place to start. So, I didn't put these in great order, so I'm gonna march around a little bit. I've spoken about New York before. Oops. That comes in a little better. Uh-oh. This is what I do. I do this. There's this great place called Highline Park that's kind of grown up in about the last 10 years. You can see these people are walking on sort of a deck thing, but it's built on an elevated train trestle for about 20 blocks in Manhattan. About in the mid 90s, somebody noticed that there was weeds and trees growing on this trestle that had been abandoned about 15 years before, and they climbed up there, and it was the greenest for 20 blocks. It was the greenest place in Manhattan, maybe except for Central Park. So some landscape architects, figured out how to make it into this skinny park that's elevated above the ground and has great views of the Hudson River, as well as Manhattan. At one end, you can even see the Statue of Liberty. It goes from about 8th Street to 34th Street. And, now after, 10 or 15 years of planting, it's a wonderful little park. So here it is. You can see on the right side, it's elevated. It's a train trestle about eight tracks wide. And then, there's the traffic and parking lots down below. So that's, and along the way is artwork, the statues, and mainly statues. And my hotel was right around the beginning of the park, and I was actually there to go to a conference for 5 days, but I stayed an extra week to have a great vacation. And my conference was about, up around, 34th Street. So I just walked along this park every day and took pictures. So that's why they're not so much in order, because then I took pictures in museums in between, and then there was always the park. So here's a few museums, so this is another view of, subways, where they store all the subway lines, runs underneath this park. This is at the very end, the last few blocks, they're leaving it just the way it was before. So this is how it was first discovered in the mid 90s, actually you can see way in the upper left hand corner, there's a person leaning over a railway, a handrail, and they're actually walking on the park. And this is sort of what people can see is how it looked before they turned it into this glorious park. They put these kind of architectural benches all over. So these are park benches. So here you're standing, walking along the park, And you're looking in the, this is about the third story window of a junior high school cafeteria. And they're looking at you, you know, walking along the park on vacation, and they're eating their lunch. And you're just relating differently to each other. It's almost like they're, you know, they're framed in an art, in a frame there. And you're saying, those are just, that's a beautiful picture of a lunchroom. This is one of the sculptures. It's an outline of an altar in some cathedral in Europe. So in Europe, of course, it's all filled in with, like our altar, you know, with Jesus figures and flowers and candles. But there's a little sign, I couldn't get close enough to focus on it, but the sign said the artist wanted us to have a direct experience of the world. And that's what in the scene, there is just the scene is. You're just experiencing the world without a story. Directly, without embellishing. You know, this altar was embellished with flowers and candles and fruit offerings and statues. Sometimes our mind embellishes the world we live in with stories. But the sculptor, the artist, was asking us, could we just have this direct experience of standing there, looking out onto Manhattan, without all the embellishment that our mind usually puts there? So there's a tree growing up in the tracks, planted there, it didn't spring up there. So this is like a viewing of, you're sitting on these architectural benches and looking down through a plexiglass window onto the stars, or onto the cars going beneath you. And, you know, when you're in New York, or even when you're in Santa Cruz, you see a lot of cars, and you don't usually think of them as, I'm watching an art display. But there I was, and there I was with all these people, kind of standing on a work of art, the Highline Park, where everything, where every vista is we're looking at with new eyes. We're looking at as a work of art. We're saying, you know, this is bigger than just cars going beneath me. This is the story of humanity, and this is a reflection of the total dynamic functioning as it's manifesting right here and right now. And that's the sort of stuff you do for those 20 blocks between 8th and 34th, is that everything becomes part of your life, part of why you're here. So I went to the memorial for the 9/11 memorial, and this is the new building on the site of the Twin Towers. It's actually a few feet or a few inches taller than the Twin Towers, and it's beautiful. It's another office building with many, many kind of global global businesses in there, but just beautiful. And in the Twin Towers, their foundations were kind of on either side of it. And it's a big park. At the base of this building is actually a museum that you can go into, the 9/11 Museum. But it was a day like this, a beautiful day in New York. Come on. So this is one of the foundations, and I should have taken a little movie of this, but this is actually waterfall. This is the waterfalls from the very top, right at the base of the trees, and goes, you know, many stories down. I mean, this is huge. It's hard to tell how big that is, but there's two of them, two big water features. And from no place can you see the very bottom. You can see it just keeps going down and down. And then I'm standing in front of a granite handrail that's really quite thick, that has the names of all the people that died in the Twin Towers and in the airplanes that crashed into the towers. So this must be another day. You know, after I went to the memorial, I walked back to the park. So more park. I don't know what that is. It's going to start over. So our treasurer, Michael Bashista, said that I should go to the Museum of Modern Art, MoMA, to see the Picasso sculptures, and they were wonderful, and I've got a picture of one of those. Maybe you saw one. But there was also a show there of Andy Warhol. And here's his Marilyn Monroe screen prints. And in the next room, I didn't take them. I don't know why I didn't take them, but were all of his soup cans. He did every flavor, 76 of them, that are about 3 feet tall. All pretty much alike, except for the names of the soup. But here's Marilyn in many vistas of Marilyn. And this was what it said. Go down way to the bottom. About repetitions, you know, all the soup cans, all the Marilyn Monroes. About, you see where I am? About repetitions, Warhol said, the more you look at the same exact thing, the more the meaning goes away, and the better and emptier you feel. So there he was in the 60s, you know. Maybe he started every morning at 5:45 sitting at the Brooklyn Zen Center to learn about looking at your mind over and over again, the same exact thing. And finally, it drops away, and you join the total dynamic functioning of the whole universe, the great emptiness, the great fullness. That's what he was telling us in Maryland. And of course, this is one of Picasso's. You know, how did Picasso view the world? How did he see guitars? How did he see bullfights? He saw them in, you know, just this huge connected way. You know, yes, that's a guitar, but that's also the whole universe. That's the whole music of the universe. You know, in museums, they let you get really close these days. It used to be you had to view things from far away, but I could almost put my nose right up against it. I just had to have my toes behind this little line that was just about a foot away from the wall. I think we've seen all my, yeah, I think we've seen all my photos. The morning I got back, I was listening to Garrison Keillor and his Writer's Almanac, and a little jet lagged. I slept in. I didn't come to the Zendo that first morning, but so there I was drinking tea. And this is what Garrison wrote, a poem by Barry Spex called Looking at a Lizard. My only purpose this moment is looking at a lizard. Does he know he's not alone? He breathes with tiny push-ups, his skin all hairline caverns soaking up the sun. I doubt alive, I'm liable to get closer to timelessness than this, looking at that lizard breathing. I doubt alive, I'm liable to get closer to timelessness than this, looking at that lizard breathing. So, the punchline, of course, is how can we always be surrounded by a great work of art? How can we always remember that we're none other than a work of art, thriving in the midst of a work of art? And all the appearances before our eyes, Alexander, Nettie, Lee, are just appearances of beautiful art shown to us by the universe. It reminds me of what are those little telescopes called with pieces of glass in there, and you look in them and you turn the kaleidoscope? Is that because the little pieces of glass in there are colliding? You know, you turn that thing, or else you just turn it, and it's just colored pieces of glass. Clunk, clunk. And then, you know, a few mirrors inside, and you just get this great view, this beautiful reflection. Kathy, you're just this beautiful reflection of the causes and conditions of the universe right now. Peter, you're a beautiful reflection. A little greener now. A beautiful reflection of just the causes and conditions right now. How can we keep that practice going? Buddha ends his instruction to the monk Bahia on how do you practice. I read this a few weeks ago too. Where water, earth, fire, and wind have no footing, There the stars don't shine. The sun isn't visible. The moon doesn't appear. There darkness is not found. And when a sage, through his wisdom, has realized this, then from form and formlessness, from bliss and pain, the monk is freed. So when we're not labeling everything, water, earth, perfume, car honking noises, when we're not labeling things, it's not dark there. In fact, we can get around pretty well. We don't run into people in the sidewalks of New York. We're just freed from our old ideas and our old habits. And we can walk around Santa Cruz and New York and Aptos looking at these great reflections of the universe wherever we go. So maybe others have had great experiences on vacation or great experiences on their way to the Zendo. You know, if anything happened to me on the way to the Zendo this afternoon, we've got a couple of minutes. Lenore.
I recognize your experience, or the experience with watching the lizard. I was camping in the desert in a very changing period of my life, and in some contemplation, watching, it was some kind of a larva that was going to become a beautiful butterfly sometime, going from this bush to that bush. There was a train of them. One of them kind of got astray and went to my tent and couldn't find the way back. And he goes up along the tent. No, that's not the way. He goes back. And no, that's not the way. Back and forth a few times. And I'm just fascinated watching, watching this. And finally, he goes up and over the thing that tied the tent stake into the ground, the string, and wandered back and found his scent path again. But I was keeping a journal, and I noticed, and I said, this is either the highest point of my life or the lowest. And I knew which it was. I knew which it was. I never had such a... I never had that suchness before.
Well, I mean, that is another experience of the timelessness that he talked about in there. Or even you can imagine those people just sitting on those benches, timelessly watching the cars go by underneath them with that same sort of suspended sense of time, the same kind of lot. Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. Richard.
If I can, if I can really condense a short little story of my own that I think incorporates your idea of the scene, just being the scene and the herd and so forth. Tassajara, I was working with a bodhisattva, a wonderful fellow, and we were working together doing something, setting up the pool, whatever, but I was complaining about some of the ecological things that were going on there, and I think something had to be said or done about septic system and so forth. And he said to me, for these 3 months, Rich, why don't you practice not worrying about that and not thinking about anything like that at all, just follow the schedule and see what happens. And let's call that your practice. And this practice period And when the practice period's over, then see how you feel about the septic system and so forth. And if you want to beef on something or say something about it, see if that's any different than how you're looking at it right now. And that for me ties together the idea of two truths. Because you're not just, it isn't just a question of practice and of the seen being seen, but that sets a ground then for things like right action, skillful means. And I always like to not forget that, oh, this means something in life in terms of how I function.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. You were practicing that koan, Buddha is the dried shit stick. And you did a 3-month practice of one of our central koans. Thank you. But getting up with the bell, just sitting down with the bell, just going to bed with the bell is really a nice way of dropping this body and mind, dropping our old habits. And thank you. So why don't we go have some cookies in the house that's set up in the house today? And we can talk more if you'd like. And thank you very much. Being the number is I vow to say none. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless.